and welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals to talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. Let me go in and introduce the crew, and guys, if you don't mind waiting for the video portion of our show, yes, we have Chief Ralph Ornelas. He's retired from the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. I got it right. I even said department because you guys don't have offices over there in California, and then he became a police chief out there as well. He never quite left California, so he is still there. And then we got Jeff Winninger, retired commander, LAPD, and retired as a lieutenant. He's migrated over to, he's living the life in Ohio. Don't let him fool you with anything else that he says. He's living the dream. So thanks for being on the show, gentlemen. I appreciate it. You know, we've got some interesting main stories. And what I would like to do is just to go ahead and take this first one and then get the wheel running on the second one. And then we'll go through the rest of the stories. And I'd also like to kind of, you know, run through, you know, our sponsors that we have too. And guys, please support our sponsors. They go to great lengths to bring this good quality content to you. We've got our title sponsor, Gulls at Gulls.com. We also have ComplianTechnologies.com, our satellite sponsor. We have GunLearn.com, my Medicare.live Safeguard Recruiting. And they're our streaming sponsor. Thanks to Safeguard, we're streaming to over a million followers right now during the live show. And also TwoBells.com. They built a new online store at LeoRoundtable.com. You can go there to our online store. You just go to LeoRoundtable.com. Upper right-hand corner, you got the online store. You can get cool gear like the shirt Jeff's wearing or like the mug behind me. We've got a lot of cool gear. We don't charge anything extra. I saw that face, Ralph. We don't charge anything extra for the gear that we sell. We're just trying to get our gear out there. So also a shout out to Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com. Thanks for carrying our content, Brian. Also Reed Dietrich with FormerLawman.com and our very own Travis Yates with LawOfficer.com. Thanks to all those entities for helping make the show happen. And now our first story, it's taken from Tampa Free Press, which is TampaFP.com. From the Octagon to the border, Oklahoma Senator Mark Wayne Mullen's hardline path to DHS power. And of course, we're talking about Department of Homeland Security. So this is a little shakeup last week. President Donald Trump confirmed on Thursday that Oklahoma Senator Mark Wayne Mullen will take over as Secretary of Department of Homeland Security by the end of the month. Now, this is huge for law enforcement. We're going to start seeing a lot more of this guy. Mullen, he's a member of the Cherokee Nation, former mixed martial arts fighter. Don't pick a fight with him. He represented Oklahoma's second congressional district for a decade, and then he won a special election to become a senator back in 2022. And throughout his time in Washington, it goes on to say that he established a reputation as a staunch advocate for rigorous border enforcement, which is a good thing because of where he's going. He previously supported the use of military resources at the southern border. He was a vocal proponent of constructing an actual physical wall, for the border during Trump's first term. The leadership change comes at a high-stakes moment of the department. Recent weeks were marked by the fallout of Operation Metro Surge. Is talking about that joint ICE and Border Patrol operations where we had a couple people killed. And of course, it wasn't like they were good people, even though Renee's last name was Good. But we had that Renee Good and Alex Pretty that ended up getting killed. But they were bad actors. In a statement released Thursday, Mullen addressed recent controversies by defending the actions of law enforcement. He specifically spoke on the Minneapolis shooting, arguing that the agents involved faced immediate physical danger. Mullen stated that he looks forward to executing the mission of, quote, restoring law and order, unquote, and safeguarding the American people. He is scheduled to officially start as Secretary of Homeland Security on March 31st. So guys, write that date down. Curious what your take is, gentlemen, on this with the little law. I mean, I'm trying not to really focus so much on the rumor mill on why it happened. It just, I'm trying to focus on the fact that it happened, but I'm pretty excited about it. What do you guys think? Ralph, you want to start us off?
Yeah, I'm excited about it too, to see how he addresses some of the issues that were coming out and some of the negativity with the previous person in that position, to see how he corrects some of the policies and how his voice kind of in line with Tom Homan. I believe that, Wayne Mullen, I think he has a good resume and he's got some bipartisan support. Fetterman and Welch, who are Democrats, supporting his nomination. And I like the fact that he's going to continue some of this strength on the border. We need to strengthen the border. We need to do it. But I also hopefully that he puts some good regulations in with some of the officers and the operations that had been taking place. And some of the things that Democrats have recommended, we spoke about the last time you and I, Chip, and Dr. Joel, some of their recommendations a little bit over at the top about handcuffing some of the officers. But I think the body-worn camera, I believe, is important to capture some of the activity. So go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, the reality is, Christine Ohm, she was over her head. She didn't have the qualifications, and she misspoke a few times. Her narrative and the messaging was off, and she's going to have an uphill battle. And it looks like there's some other things that may be coming down the pike that basically would have disqualified her from holding that type of critical position. I, as well as Ralph, am encouraged by, the Democrats that are happy with this appointment. I think the success is going to be the ability to work cooperatively with locals and state entities and working together where you're utilizing all your resources towards a shared goal. And, hopefully he'll be able to do that. He seems to be aligned with Holman. Holman did a great job when he was when he replaced Noam in Minneapolis, and I was able to go move forward in a way that I believe was successful. So, I think it was a good move. It's definitely an improvement. But boy, what a tough position. It's probably one of the toughest positions to be in at this time in our country's history.
If I could add to it what Jeff said, what Christy Noam, as I always said when I was a drill instructor to all the other drill instructors, don't give recruits too much airtime. They start believing in their articles or the commentary. Christy Noam believed in all these positive ways she looked and stuff like that. And, she failed. She failed on that. And I think that it's bitter in the butt, to be honest with you. And also, I really have to say this too, though. And I want to hear from Jeff when I make this comment, and you too, and the audience, Chip. I believe there needs to be more relevant training to ICE and CBP and crowd control. I like to know how do they handle a shooting? What supervisors are on there? What is their reviews of shootings? I mean, there's a lot of things. When I look at some of the shootings that you send, Chip, as a supervisor, and I used to review this stuff. I know Jeff did a lot of it too. What is their policies that are put in place? Especially you have a video today later on of a nice shooting that turned out not to be so good. So there's a lot of training I think that needs to be reviewed with ICE and CBP.
Yeah, I mean, I believe that training is the core of what needs to be addressed for the success of law enforcement. Oftentimes, when we see deficiencies and less than optimal outcomes, it's not a situation where it's the individual officers or agents' fault. It's more the organization's. It's an extension of their failure to prepare them and train them to be able to be successful in these types of situations. And, unfortunately, that's all about money, isn't it? Training costs a lot of money. And unfortunately, training oftentimes is the first thing to get nixed when you're talking about budgets and things like that.
I got to add to what Jeff said, though, Chip, in the audience, is that Jeff posted something just recently about the culture within an organization, too. What is the culture addressing issues that need to be addressed? And sometimes some cultures, I know when I was in the sheriff's department, some of the things I went through, guess what? They stepped away from that, not addressing that culture. And here we go again. What is the training for sergeants in leadership, lieutenants in leadership?
I would like to see less, there's so many mistakes. Jeff touched on it with the previous director, or secretary, but there's such a rush to get the word out there after a shoot. And that's where a lot of missteps are made. You know what the other side is going to say, it's coming, but they just want to get that narrative out there. And in the process of doing that, they just say too much, the officer was hit or he was moving or they did this, they did that. And, cause there is a process that we have to go through. I see more people than not get themselves in the grease by just not resisting the urge to say too much, and now they're committed, right? And when you're relying on other people, you know, for what they're getting, what they're telling you, and the information is not vetted. So,
yeah. That's key, because, and it's not just Kristi Noem who should be criticized for that, because she's getting the information from subordinates all the way down the chain of command. And if you've had, I mean, I've had my hand in over 700 lethal force cases, whether investigating or adjudicating. And the reality is you don't really know what happened for a day or so. I mean, it's
at least have
the branches of your investigation that are all going out and doing different aspects of it. And then you come back to the office the next day and you sit down at the table, you start triaging, and then you have to go back out and put things together. It's 48 hours before you really have any clue what's going on. And so to be making those types of statements, it's just a lack of experience, I suppose. The more you do it, the better you get at it. And you certainly can't be making, any time that I hear these conclusive statements within hours, I'm like, oh, this is going to blow up.
You know, Jeff, you're 100% right. It's education about how to handle the media, you know, as a lieutenant, captain, whatever rank it is. And you know, one of the things I feel gracious about and fortunate with the LA County Sheriffs, they did some training when I was coming up to the ranks about how to handle the press. Don't let the press dictate to you. And it goes back to having the proper information available.
Well, guys, we're getting ready to go to Ecuador on our next one. So stick with us. We got a commercial break coming up. We'll be right back.
My family only cares about one thing, that I come home safe.
At Galls, every order begins with a promise. Made with purpose. Stitched for support. Backed with pride. Answered by dedicated hands. Delivering the standard you have sworn to uphold. We serve more than the mission. We serve the person. Each piece is engineered to help get our first responders through the shift and back home safe.
Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by Chief Ralph Ornelas from California and former LAPD commander, Lieutenant Jeff Wininger. And guys, if you're ready, our next main topic, it's about Ecuador. You guys ready to make the jump? All right. So Tampa Free Press at tampafp.com. U.S. launches lethal anti-narco-terrorist operation in Ecuador, of all places. Now, not, you know, depending on what sources you follow, there may not be a lot of information out there like with some of this other stuff, like with Iran and stuff. So a lot of people may not be fully aware of this stuff. The United States military is supporting an anti-narco-terrorist operation in Ecuador, according to a Friday night release. And since September the 2nd, U.S. military forces have conducted multiple strikes against drug-running vessels. We all know about that, including sinking a boat with 11 members of Venezuela's Tren del Agua gang. And they have been designated, as we all know, a foreign terrorist organization by Trump. And back on January the 20th, and that was 2025. That was over a year ago. The statement noted that Ecuadorian forces were carrying out combat operations against terrorist groups. And it kind of goes on to say that that Secretary of State Marco Rubio, and I don't know about you guys, I have a new love for Marco Rubio. That dude is sharp. And I tell you, he is, you know, for someone that was like this with Trump when they were both running for the same job, and the fact that Trump has taken him in and what they're doing together, it blows my mind. But anyhow, Secretary Marco Rubio designated two Ecuadorian gangs with ties to Mexico drug cartels. And, you know, I know that, Ralph, you can pronounce these names better than I can. Los Choneros and Los Lobos. Hopefully I came close.
Choneros and Los Lobos, yes.
Yeah, that's what I said. Anyhow, as four terrorist organizations.
I just wanted to say it.
This was done on September the 4th, 2025, so half a year ago. Trump designated Mexican drug cartels as foreign terrorist organizations when he took office, and that was at Trump 2.0. The United States, in partnership with Ecuador and its president, Daniel Noboa, they will continue to protect both nations by keeping illicit drugs off the streets, disrupting revenue streams, funding cartel terrorism and criminal activity. And this is all through the department, the State Department, which is where, you know, Rubio shining right now. And some other titles. The next title was Rubio and Noem launch a Shield of the Americas to crush cartels and secure borders. And Kristi Noem, of course, has been moved to that new position now. And also, we got Trump declares war on cartels, 17-nation military coalition formed to demolish networks. And that's nothing short of being a brilliant. But I know this is your wheelhouse, Ralph. And so I'm going to let you take it from here and clue us in on what's going on. So educate us. Ralph School is now in session.
Well, I'm not an expert. Like I said on Randy Sutton's show, I'm a student of the game still. And I'll tell you this, is that I like what our country's doing. We need to put these cartels in the gangs on the heels. I look back in even the 90s when we had some military people go down to Colombia to work with the DEA, work with the Colombian government. And that's how we eradicated the Colombian Medellin cartel and the Cali cartel. I also believe that when I was working in Central America, the collaboration between the FBI, the DA, LA County Sheriff's, LAPD, investigators from Jeff's agency, we work collaboratively, and we have to have this coordination of intelligence. Intelligence, I call it the blood triangle. The blood triangle is from the south of Central America to the East Coast, the West Coast, United States, to share information and caseload. We started doing that. I believe what's taking place right now, speaking to some of my friends in Central America, is this is what's taking place between the DEA, the FBI, the military. And I believe Marco Rubio and some of the military and these federal agencies, with the help of some of the countries in Central America, especially with Bucali, Guatemala's government and Honduras's government, they're starting to build that bridge, that team partnership to share this information, because they know, number one, if we don't do this, it's going to affect economy. It's going to affect you know, the governments, the economy, each of us, their people, the safety of the people within our countries. You look at what's taken place in the last 5 years of our country with fentanyl poisonings, is over 500,000 deaths, poisonings from the ages of 10 years old to 45 years old. And I'll tell you, put politics aside, just strictly what is the right thing to do to protect our youth, of our future, of our country. We need to have this collaboration to make this move right now. And I believe we have a person in leadership, Marco Rubio, and some of the military to be able to do that. Go ahead, Jeff. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, you know, really the only thing that I can think of is that oftentimes in law enforcement, we have people that build up unbelievable levels of expertise. And then it's time for them to pull their pin, they retire. And unfortunately, we don't draw on that expertise any further. And, you know, Marco Rubio working with Kristi Noem, this is a very, very important aspect for national security. As Ralph said, not just economically, but for the physical safety of Americans within our borders. But the reality is that people like Ralph need to be reached out to be appointed to these types of positions, or at least be consultants on them, because he was doing this back when these people were bumping their heads off of coffee tables. And the reality is he knows the history, he knows how things have evolved over time, and he can give them better direction than probably Kristi Noem's going to know what to do with, if that makes any sense. And I'm not trying to bash her. I'm just saying, what a waste of resource of information, knowledge, and expertise that people like Ralph have that aren't being utilized. And I'd love to see it better utilized, even in his retirement years.
You know, if I could just say this to the audience and both of you, and I know we only got 36 seconds, what LAPD did, Gary Brennan was the deputy chief, I was lieutenant, and with the FBI, we created a Central American Law Enforcement Exchange Program. If we could have kept up that model from then before in 2006 to 2012 to now, we would have been ahead of the game.
All right, excellent point. Good words, guys. I think he's finally bringing you out of retirement, Ralph. Hey, it's time for our next commercial break. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about Comply Technologies at ComplyTechnologies.com. And they are committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low-ethics manner, utilizing their CD3, which stands for Conductor Distraction and De-escalation Technology. Now, their flagship product, we all know by now, is called the Glove. It's helped officers not only tens of thousands of times, but they've had over 250,000 deployments with no injuries. And you heard that correctly. I said no injuries. The Glove has actually achieved non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. And when it comes to weapons retention, transitioning to a sidearm or conductive energy weapon, the Glove at ComplyTechnologies.com, they virtually eliminated weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Comply Technologies and the revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already turned to nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most common sense, hands-on solutions that's ever come along. So go to ComplyTechnologies.com today and tell them that Chip sent you. Again, that is ComplyTechnologies.com. Check it out. You'll be glad you did. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. And we've got Chief Ralph Ornelas from California, former LAPD Commander, Lieutenant Jeff Winninger on the show as well. We just got done talking about our joint venture with Ecuador, and golly, Marco Rubio tearing it up. We got some other stuff that's going to be coming down the pike on this as well. Guys, if there's something else, great. If not, I want to get rolling. We're halfway through the show, and we've got some more stuff to cover, so if that's okay. And we are streaming. We got a lot of guys like Danny Thomas on Facebook that's watching the show. So thanks for the support, guys. We appreciate it. If you guys have any questions or anything that you want us to weigh in on, and if we can get to it, we will be watching, streaming, watching for those. So moving along here, our next one that we've got, I know that we got a couple of videos here, and let me just see here. You know, I'm looking at what I'm gonna hold on to that Minneapolis one. Let's jump into a video real quick here. Rumble.com, our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter. We have a body cam. It's a video. They say it contradicts ICE claims in a fatal shooting of a U.S. citizen, Ruben Ray Martinez.
Stop him. Get him out. Stop the fucking vehicle. Shots fired. Near 2300, shots fired.
Now, I got to tell you, like, most of the time these things come out, this the details under this video, at least in my opinion, are heavily slanted. And because they're coming up with a conclusion in the title and in the details that simply, in my opinion, cannot be verified from the video. It's pretty, I wouldn't say it's poor quality video. It's just what the video shows. It's just not, you know, it's just not at the critical points in time that would answer all the questions. And then it's just a video. You know, there's so many other components and things that come into play in addition to a video in order to make a good educated decision on this. But South Padre Island, Texas, video of a March 2025. Now think about that. I didn't say 2026. So this is over a year ago, fatal shooting of an American citizen. And, you know, Ruben Ray Martinez, they say that it appears to contradict claims by the feds that Martinez, was shot by, well, I'm going to say he's our bad guy, because the video clearly established that this guy's running past law enforcement in his car and not obeying commands. But they're saying that it counters the claims by the feds that he was shot by an immigration officer, an ICE agent, because he, quote, accelerated and, quote, intentionally ran over another agent with his car. Now, it says the killing of Martinez, who was 23 at the time in South Padre Island, Texas, on March It was March 15th. So it's almost been a year that it was reported by the local news outlets at that time. We didn't really hear much about it, but it was not until February of this year, 11 months later, that ICE confirmed that one of his agents had actually done the fatal shot to Martinez. In an internal report released by a nonprofit watchdog group last month, ICE said Martinez accelerated forward and struck an agent during the March 2025 incident. Now, the Department of Homeland Security claimed in a statement that an ICE agent had fired defensive shots into the bad guy's vehicle, Martinez's vehicle, after he, quote, intentionally ran over, unquote, another agent. And now they're going on saying the body cam video, which has not been previously reported, it shows the Martinez's vehicle, a blue Ford Fusion, was stationary or going at a very low rate of speed when he was fatally shot. And it said when the gunshots were heard in the video that you can see the brake lights on the vehicle that they're on. It said that after he was shot three times, we can see, and you can see the bad guy being pulled out of the car, thrown to the ground by an ICE agent, face down and handcuffed. They make it sound like it's a big deal that they didn't provide first aid for the guy until after he was cuffed. That's standard protocol for a lot of places, though. The Texas Department of Public Safety, they said that they did an investigation and that the grand jury declined to return criminal indictments in the case. So, I know that a lot of jurisdictions, a lot of jurisdictions, especially when you're dealing with the feds, they're going to run things through for a grand jury. Sometimes that's routine. But anyhow, this is the information that we have. And we have a video that I would say is of limited benefit. But I'm curious what you guys think. So, Jeff, why don't you start us off?
Yeah, when I watch this video, I have to agree with you, Chip. It doesn't tell me one way or another. I certainly would not put that video on the pedestal in regards to my argument that it was contrary to what was actually reported. You have to be able to put into context a lot of things, and I don't think that video does. And listen, when you look at video, you can break it down and go frame by frame, but that's not how we as humans biologically process incidents, especially rapidly unfolding tactical scenarios. You're making split-second decisions in highly stressful circumstances. And what appears to be seen on video is not necessarily what is going to be perceived by somebody. And there's explanations of that relative to the biology of people and how our brains operate. So I watch this video and I glean nothing from it, but I can tell you this much. It certainly did not cause me to have the conclusions that the article kind of insinuated that it should.
Yeah. Imagine that. Yeah. So I guess they didn't get the desired effect. I've seen so many videos, because we've been doing this for over 10 years now. I've seen so many videos where even the sound is not in sync with the video. And I'm talking not necessarily off massively, but even if the sound is off by a second or even a half a second, that can be pretty critical, when you're doing, video review and stuff. So, Chief Rao?
No, Jeff eloquently laid it out. I'll be honest with you. I watched that five times last night and this morning when I got up at 5:30, to prepare for this, before I go out and walk on the pier to get to my exit. But I was confused by it. It was like bits and pieces and commands yelled. And, just like Jeff, I've reviewed a lot of videos in patrol and in custody for force. And this is the one time, Chip, you sent me some that I felt I couldn't nail down a lot of things tactically, I liked or disliked, and stuff like this. It was like floating, And so I don't know. It just didn't bode well with me, the whole thing.
Yeah. If this is what they have after, we're just days away from the 1 year mark on this. If this is the best they've got in order to throw out a bad narrative after a year after the incident, in my opinion, it's reaching. I mean, there's so much more that would be out there that would show it was a bad shoot. And I'm not saying one way or the other, because I really haven't heard about this. But I would love to see body cam. It's kind of sad that I'm on the show saying that I kind of wish that we had more of these guys outfitted with body cams, which I'm actually saying, but 15 years ago, you wouldn't have heard me say that. You would. That was when, you know, if you remember, even my agency, when I left 12 and a half years ago, we were just rolling out the body cams to the Tampa cops. And it was a slow rollout. I was with the union. Guys didn't want any part of it. The union didn't even really want it. We didn't know what was going to happen. Now, of course, we've seen the upside of that. But one downside I have to say is that when I used to go to the court and testify, the judge would take our word over citizens, and we would our testimony would weigh heavier than what it does today. Now I've seen courts to where, absent a video showing that the officer, you know, is telling the truth or justifying his actions, you know, they're gonna side in the civilian's favor, you know. And that's it's just amazing that within, you know, a decade and a half, we've just gone to that extreme.
You know, if I can make one comment though, that really kind of perplexed me, is that I understand after the officer's handcuffed, that's fine. We did it all the time. We don't know if the person's got a weapon and why they pull them out, they handcuff them, right? But once the paramedics came on site, let the paramedics do their professional job in treating a person. And I see the HSI people putting patches and chest compressions. Let the paramedics do the job. Let the paramedics. If you notice though, there was a supervisor of paramedics. He was videotaping everything. I don't know if you noticed that, Jeff. He was videotaping them.
I didn't pick up on that.
And I wonder why, because, you know, he's going to capture, we got a shooting here. After the fire department may go through training, and we're going to document we have shootings involving interagencies, maybe. I don't know. But he's behind them videotaping the whole thing. And the officers are still treating this person. I would have just let, I don't know about you, Jeff, if the paramedics get there, I would have just let the paramedics do their job.
No, I tend to agree. You know, we had some stuff with the LAPD and the LA City Fire Department where we had some bad blood and dealt with these people. You know, the excited delirium, I know we don't call it that anymore, but, you know, these people that are juiced up on drugs and they're oftentimes naked and have this physical exertion and then they end up dying. And we as an organization are trying to figure out how best to deal with these people. And, you know, oftentimes law enforcement or the fire department would show up while law enforcement's already on the scene, and we would be dictating to the medical practitioners what we should or shouldn't be doing. And they took offense to that and would oftentimes blame us for their inability to provide the medical treatment that needed to be done. So I'm not unfamiliar with that.
All right, guys, third commercial break. Stick with us. We'll be right back. All right, time to talk about GunLearn at GunLearn.com. You know, as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns and we deal with ammo every day. But it's what we don't know about them that gets us in the trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and disciplinary issues. But GunLearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending the live seminar at GunLearn.com. You can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialists like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett and also attorney Ken Afiako. Now, the course has had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn has been a trusted source since way back in 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies, forensic organizations, and even police departments nationwide. Now, the founder, Dan O'Kelly, has got a deal for you. If you have your own agency, if you're a chief or a sheriff, you can actually host a seminar for absolutely no cost. It's an amazing opportunity. You go to GunLearn.com to get more information. And again, that site is GunLearn.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by former LAPD Commander Lieutenant Jeff Winninger and former Chief all the way from California, Ralph Ornelas. So thanks for being on the show, gentlemen. We've been talking about an ICE shooting that happened in Texas about a year ago. Kind of hearing most of that information for the first time, but we talked about, even though the article, as heavily slanted as it was, not in favor of the shoot, they didn't really, a year later, the video that they're, you know, playing their, you know, putting all their bets on, the cards they have, it's not really pulling it off. It doesn't really back up what they're saying. If you guys are ready, we've got another video involving some deputies. So at rumble.com, this is Butter again, our favorite law enforcement video channel. We have a Charles County deputies. They fatally shoot a machete wielding guy during an arrest. And it looks like we're in Maryland on this one, in Charles County. So two Charles County Sheriff's Office deputies reportedly shot and killed a guy on Wednesday evening. The officers responded to White Plains. They're serving a DV warrant. And it's 2:30 in the afternoon, and it said they ended up firing their guns, hitting this guy. Officer said the guy approached the deputies with a machete moments before the shooting, and despite medical efforts, he was declared dead at the scene. And going back to my notes, this goes down pretty quickly. I recommended that you guys just start watching 10 seconds in, and the suspect appears at the 20-second mark. And he's got a machete, and we've got our main cop or our main deputy that's got wearing the body cam. He's got I love to see rifles now with these guys. And so we have one deputy who's outfitted with a rifle, department issued rifle, and it looks like an AR, and the other guy's got his pistol out. And even though we don't have the sound really activated until the guy ends up getting shot, our deputy takes care of business with the rifle, with this guy, you know, that's got the machete. And it's really, it creates, in my opinion, the rifle creates a safer environment. I mean, it's safer for the deputy, but also for the surrounding people when you have a bad backdrop. And I'm not saying there was a bad backdrop in this situation, but it allows you to get more shots on target, because we know as cops, you know, we're not the best shots, right? And so I just love to see this guy from Charles County, that the sheriff has outfitted his cops with rifles. So commentary on this one, guys, anybody? Jeff Winninger.
Yeah, you know, every tactical situation you can look at and you can debrief it and find things that you did well and then find things that you can improve upon. This one, it's kind of difficult because I have no idea what was known to the deputies prior to arriving at the scene. But the one thing that I did note was that when they were exiting their vehicles, they were a little close to this suspect. You know, what I would have liked to have seen is oftentimes we deploy couple houses away. You know, we used to always say that your handgun is for surprise situations, and you want to bring a long gun in the event that you anticipate something could escalate to the point where deadly force may be necessary. But that would have afforded you the opportunity to have some time moving to cover, be able to communicate, to better assess and evaluate what was going on. Because most importantly, they were in a critical situation where their lives were at risk. When this guy drew I'm going to call it a sword, man. I mean, it's just out from his pants. I mean, it was on. You could just improve perhaps on how you deployed. But like I said, there may have been extra circumstances where they knew they had to get right in on it. So it's hard to be critical.
Thank you for that, Jeff. But also I'll add to it is, number one, Jeff mentioned distance is time. I've always trained my trainees, or when I worked out in the field, but in a one-person car, distance is time to give me opportunity to think things out, you know, number one. Number two, the other thing I would have communicated, if Jeff and I were partners in one-person vehicles, I say, Jeff, I got the rifle, you got the rifle, I'm gonna use the 40 caliber first to see if we can take this guy down. The reason why I say that, the way, Chip, what's going on right now in this day and age, they look at what preceded the use of deadly force, right? So I would always try to be the Steven Spielbergs of this movie, right? To at least have on site a less than lethal of deadly force first to use. And that's where the distance in time gives you that opportunity to do it. And that's the only thing I would criticize. The other thing, I like what one of the officers said, hey, let's get some people to check the background drop, because, you know, that AR-15 might have went through the guy, or maybe a couple of rounds went by. Check on the citizens. That's so important, because God forbid is somebody laying in bed, worked early mornings, is sleeping and gets a brown through the head. So, yeah. You know, so there's a lot of things that are good. The other thing I got to say is they hit him three times in the body, and they would try to hesitate on the radio. The guy was dead. I mean, the guy got hit in the head. I understand they have to do that for the body worn cameras and the ceiling of the chest. But I'm telling you, we're all experts here. We've all been around.
Yeah, you know. He's dead. Yeah, you know. We I'm trying to avoid sounding insensitive. We've all been there at those scenes where you get there, the guy's gurgling already and he's bleeding, or you're doing chest compressions and you're just making him bleed out faster. You know, you've got you just know when, but I know there's optics and stuff, and people expect you to be working on people, even though you've got an injury that the guy's not going to come back for, or if you did, there's going to be so much damage, you know, that he's going to wish he was dead, you know, but it's, yeah, I know exactly what you're saying.
Well, hey, the amount of blood around his head was, you could tell, I mean, there's so much blood around his head.
I've got two stories I'd like to get to real quick, if it's okay with you guys, if you guys will let me take the lead on this one. The San Diego deputy convicted in the fatal shooting, lawofficer.com. I know we've only got about 3 minutes, so I'll try to do a minute and a half for each one of these, but this federal jury has convicted this guy, San Diego County Sheriff's Department Deputy Aaron Richard Russell, in the fatal shooting of an unarmed guy. Basically, this is outside the jail. They're transporting this guy, and he ends up fleeing and breaking away from the cops and stuff, and this deputy ends up shooting him, and they end up charging him with him. So they said it was a California State Parks officers had taken the guy into custody earlier in the afternoon, and the parks officer approached him. He's at the park. It's closed. It's COVID, you know, and the guy he's caught, searched, handcuffed, placed in the rear seat of a law enforcement car for transport. And it's uneventful until they get to the facility. And then he gets one hand free from his handcuffs, maneuvers his arm through a partially lowered window, and escapes and stuff. Any commentary on that cop getting jammed up for that shoot?
Real quickly. I mean, I got to be honest with you. I've been in a situation like that at Bellflower Court. We had a guy that broke away, had one handcuff on. And what do I always say when he went out to the academy, the 5 C's. Contain, coordinate, control, command, and communicate. We brought in a helicopter. We had a canine. You know, I'm not going to let my special problems people, a guy that's got one handcuff, his back to him, shoot a guy through the back. He's escaped. Use the 5 C's, helicopter, canine. The canine let goes, bit the crap out of him. Guess what? We didn't kill the guy.
Excellent. Well, look, lastly, and perfect timing, Ralph, this next one, California's epic record-keeping fail, nearly 500,000 criminal cases not properly reported. Los Angeles County, so this is your responsibility, because we're talking about Los Angeles County, Ralph. Los Angeles County Superior Court quietly disclosed that nearly 500,000 criminal cases dating back to 1965 were never properly reported to the state due to a technical error. Now, I'm going to skip through all the red tape. I'm going to get to the last paragraph. The implications of this, because this is what it really means, the implications of this backlog extend to employers across the state of California who rely on the state DOJ background checks for hiring people. For decades, particularly between 1986 and 2006, when the bulk of these unreported cases occurred, individuals with felony or misdemeanor convictions may have passed live scan fingerprint screenings unscathed, potentially landing jobs in sensitive fields like education, healthcare, and even security. Well, and Jeff, you worked there too.
Incompetence. You know, and I say that not with, you know, it breaks my heart, but incompetence.
Yeah.
Jeff?
I got nothing.
Well, you hear some of this stuff and you just think, wow. Because I was trying to think, well, how bad could this really have been? And then I get to that last paragraph and I'm like, ooh, wow, people getting into all kinds of jobs. So, yeah. Hey, another great show. Thank you so much, Chief, for being on the show. Chief Ralph Ornelas. And guys, if you guys want anything on fentanyl, Narcan, that's the man. Book him in California, in the state of California, and former LAPD commander, Lieutenant Jeff Wininger. And I know that Jeff's got his book too. That is On Thin Ice at onthinicebook.com. You guys can check that out as well. And how's the book doing, Jeff?
Oh, it's doing well. And you can pick it up on Amazon or anywhere they sell books.
All right. I love it. Hey, guys, a shout out to our sponsors, Gauls, our title sponsor at Gauls.com. Also, ComplianTechnologies.com, our satellite sponsor. We have GunLearn.com and Medicare.live, Safeguard Recruiting, and Two Bells have built a new online store. Check out the online store, guys. We appreciate the support. We'll see you back tomorrow, 12 noon Eastern.